Stem cell science is changing medicine and our understanding of human development. Learn more with the Stem Cell Channel. Visit uctv.tv/stemcell.
I want to bring you back to basic molecular biology, where we're interested in how information gets moved from the DNA to protein. And we've been interested in the class of proteins that modify and regulate this this information movement. And these are RNA-binding proteins. These are proteins that, by definition, simply bind RNA. And by doing so, they modulate editing, splicing, many different things on the RNA to increase our diversity of genes from 20,000 genes to like 100,000 proteins. And just to remind everybody, most RNA-binding proteins bind to many, many different RNA substrates on the right. Maybe my mouse can see it. And they modulate, even on the same RNA, different life cycle steps of the RNA processing, right? So you can have things that bind to affect splicing, things that then still affect export, translation, and so on. And just as an interesting, maybe a reminder as well, a fifth of the human proteome consists of RNA binding proteins. That's four times larger than the number of kinases, probably two times more than the number of transcription factors, or all which are known to be very important in development and disease. So we have been developing technologies in my lab to study these RNA binding proteins in human systems. And some of these relate to just simply looking for where they bind, what RNAs they interact with, using now single cell sensitive, sort of isoform sensitive technologies. Other things we've done is to basically annotate what they might do using tethering assays. So I'm not going to talk about any of these today, just a sense of what we are trying to do to enhance the field. We've also been leveraging our technologies and AI to identify drug candidates in different areas, neurodegeneration, oncology, and to study and predict protein-RNA interactions. And we wouldn't do all this if RNA binding proteins were not important in diseases. And so this is just to show you that RBP disruption or mutations in their binding sites can underlie many different diseases. We've worked in the past on myotonic dystrophy, ALS, FTD. Together with Frank Funari, we've been looking at glioblastoma. With folks in New York, we've been looking at MDS, and with folks in Boston, looking at Fragile X. But today I want to tell you a little bit about ALS. So ALS is a severe motor neuron disease that upon disease onset, you have 2 to 5 years prior to of life expectancy, prior to death. And so we've been interested in trying to tackle this disease because there currently is no cure for the disease. 30,000 Americans live with ALS in the US at any one time, and 5,000 people are diagnosed with ALS each year. So why is this interesting for an RNA biologist? Well, a critical node in ALS, or frontal temporal dementia, is this RNA binding protein TDP43. And whether or not you have mutations in your genome, right, and in the familial case where you have a family history of ALS, or you don't have family history and you get basic ALS in what we call a sporadic form, whatever the case is, most patients display this TDP43 inclusions. It's interesting. So this is at end state. If you look at the spinal cord, you see TDP43 aggregates in the cytoplasm. And so how do we think of, how does the disease happen, right? Pathogenesis. Well, in your happy, healthy neuron, TDP43 is in the nucleus. And over time, with age that we have recently shown, or with stress situations, TDP43 moves to the cytoplasm. And then through a yet undescribed process, then it becomes an aggregate over time, and then the neuron degenerates. But the first step of this is nuclear clearance. So you can see healthy neurons, TDP43 is in the nucleus, and then it mislocalizes. So what happens when a RNA binding protein like TDP43 goes to the cytoplasm from the nucleus? In the nucleus, there's a process called splicing, where introns are removed and exons are included to then fully form your mature messenger RNA that encodes a protein. And when in a healthy neuron, you have RNA binding proteins that enhance exon splicing or exon recognition or suppress exon recognition, and that keeps your cells happy. But in a diseased neuron, you could have cases where the RNA binding protein that enhances splicing is missing, or in the cytoplasm, or ones that repress splicing is missing or in the cytoplasm. And so this leads to nonsense-mediated decay, many different downstream RNA abnormalities. And there are actually many different alternative splice targets in neurodegeneration, Huntington's disease, Parkinson's, and so on. Okay, so a couple several years ago now, Don Cleveland, Kevin Egan, and a few groups identified that, well, what happens when you lose TDP-43 from the nucleus? So here's an example of just mimicking that. If you knock down TDP-43, which removes it from the nucleus, but also from the cell, you can see from RNA-seq data sets here of this one gene, STATIN2, and the reads here map to exons, right, that encode the gene, and high reads means the exon is being used in the mature mRNA. But in the TDP-43 depletion, this cryptic exon shows up. So this exon is not annotated in the genome. You know, if you look at it, you probably won't find it there. But when you lose this protein, suddenly it becomes annotated, meaning that it's suddenly there. But by using this cryptic exon, you make a truncated form of this gene, STATMIN2 truncation, and you lose mature form. And loss of STATMIN2 has been shown by many groups, including Don's group, to cause motor neuropathy. And so just to keep in mind, loss of function or loss of nuclear presence of this protein leads to truncation of this mRNA. How does this happen? Well, as I said, TDP-43 binds to this cryptic exon. It acts as like a block, right? It blocks it from the spliceosome. And so normally that's good because then you make mature mRNA and you get, you know, happy STATMIN2 protein. But in the loss of nuclear function case, TDP-43 is no longer repressing this exon. And so you have use of this cryptic exon that leads to a truncation. Okay, so nuclear clearance leads to cryptic splicing of this STATMIN2 exon in this gene, right? And so there are now many cryptic exons, although most of them may not be direct TDP-43 targets, meaning not bound by TDP-43, but a lot of things are changing. But only some of them seem to be functional, right? So there's this UNC13A gene found by Aaron Gittler and others, important for neurotransmitter release. Okay, and so this is an exciting area in neuroscience and neurodegeneration. There have been a couple of companies that have raised upwards of $100 million each, right, to make a single ASO for each target, right? So Corellis is making one ASO for STATMIN2 cryptic exon. Trace is making one ASO for UNC13A, right? But as you said, you know, as I showed you, there are many cryptic exons. And so what are the available RNA targeting splice modulation technologies available, right? So you have splice switching ASOs, which I already told you can only hit one target at a time. You also require repeat dosing every 3 or 4 months intrathecal. And there's some toxicity that's sequence dependent. And you have multiple ASOs, you get multiple synergistic toxicity. And then you have other things like DCAS13D that we and others have used, where you can package at least two guides. So you can have it hit two different places. But because it's a bacterial protein, the immunogenicity is very high. And this has not been used in people. I want to bring you to a class of RNAs that have been used and but have not been optimized, right? So this is called small nuclear RNAs, where we think that it is non-immunogenic because it's RNA only. There's no protein, right? No protein expressed. You don't have to do repeat dosing if it's an AAV. And you can hit 9 different things at the same time in one vector. Well, no one's actually shown that. And so we were interested in this, just to sort of point out, just to bring you back to this, one of these small nuclear RNAs is called U7. Which is normally a snRNA that happens in your human cells that control histone 3'-end processing, but can be optimized with things I don't have time to explain, but optimized to then not do histone 3'-end processing, but can bind to any RNA you want. So you can design a guide to hit 15, 20, you know, 30 nucleotides, any RNA you want, and then you can tether these complex over to that RNA. So you have a promoter, so that we use a human U7 promoter. You can design the guide for hybridization, and then you can have this optimal region, part of U7, and then terminator. And in a AAV instantiation, you can put up to 9. So all the slides from here on, it was made by my graduate student, Trent. And so I give him full credit. I'm not sure if he's here. Anyway, but there he is in the back. So ask him the hard questions. And when he started a project, I said, you know, is this an interesting modality? Well, I think it's an exciting modality because U7 in another indication Duchenne muscular dystrophy has been shown to be safe by IV, right? So a group of Nation children has generated snRNAs, but with the exact same snRNA design, like same sequence, same target, and it seems to be safe in individuals. They've completed phase one and two. But manufacturing has been an issue. And so I think Trent's work here actually hits on both the targeting, but also manufacturing. Okay, so what did Trent set out to do? We have this cryptic exon for Stathmon 2, and we basically want to suppress it even when TDP-43 is not in the nucleus. It's actually a simple concept, right? And so he designed guide RNAs on the cryptic exon, one overlapping the 3' splice site, so then you are preventing it from being recognized. One where TDP-43 normally binds, you know, why not? And then one where a previous antisense oligonucleotide has been made from Don Cleveland and others to also suppress, but this one region, right? So he made a bunch of sgRNAs, and you can see the top three are these ones, which I showed you, sg1, 2, and 3. And this is, you're measuring here the truncated Stathmon 2 RNA, and so lower the better, because then that means your mature mRNA full length is higher. And so with this SG1 design, we can increase Stathmon 2 mRNA by 40%. Okay, that's exciting, but not enough. And so what Trent set out to do was to actually identify better promoters. We reasoned that the higher the expression of the guide, the better you get depletion and of the exon. All right, so he found different promoters across the mouse and human genome. And this is just showing the expression of the guide. And you see with the cognate human U7 promoter, it's kind of a little set, you know, a little bleep there. But then with other promoters, you get tenfold expression of the guide. It's funny, but these are mouse promoters, right? So the mouse promoters in this context actually express the guide much higher. And then you get loss, like the concomitant loss or truncation of Stathmon 2 levels going down as the promoters get stronger, essentially, right? So that makes a lot of sense. Trent's a surfer, so he named this thing called SURF, optimized splicing by U-SNRNAs mimicking RBP function. He came up with this. I think that's kind of cool. And so this is now an optimized version that can increase Stathmon 2 levels almost more than a full of what it is missing, right? And so in iPS-derived motor neurons, how do we study this disease? Well, so in iPS motor neurons, you can mimic the loss of TDP-43 by subjecting the cells to TDP-43 ASO, so you're knocking down TDP-43. And when you knock it down, you can see that Stathmon 2 truncation goes up, right? The cryptic exon goes up because it's now gone. But then in this context, you can still treat with the guide RNAs in different concentrations, doses, and basically reduce it, right? And it's actually even better than the ASO in this case. And you can see the levels of the mRNA go up. In fact, it's like higher than non-targeting, non-TDP-43 treated, which is kind of crazy. And then the protein level, which is not so quantitative, you can still see a restoration. Okay, so that's interesting. How about some cell biology to tell us that this has an effect? And so the Cleveland lab had previously published this exonomy model, where they basically plate motor neurons in a specialized compartment, and then, you know, lob off the exons. And over time, the wild-type neurons grow back, right? They grow back their processes and their exons. But when you have a loss of TDP-43, they don't grow back. Now, if you have no TDP-43, but you rescue Stathmon 2, it actually goes back. And so even in the context of loss, right? And so we did this, or Trent, together with Michael Bond, who was then a fellow, I think, in Don's lab, did this exonomy study. It took... with Sarah took like a year plus to get this thing to work. But basically you can see that in the no knockdown condition, the exons grow back fine, but in the loss of TDP-43, exons basically don't grow back. But when you rescue this with the guide one, it goes back fine. And this is a qualitative assessment of exon growth. Okay, then we said, well, how about in vivo? So Don has a humanized, exon, cryptic exon with no GU repeat. Mouse head, and in that mouse you get increase in the truncated Stathmon 2 and a decrease in the wild type. decrease in the mature Stathmin 2 level compared to wild type. And so in AAV encapsulated SIRF SG1, you can treat the mouse by ICV injection, and you can see here, maybe better quantified here, that in wild type mice, this is the number of Stathmin 2 protein puncta in neurons. And then in non-targeting, it goes down, but in the guide one treated, it goes up. And this is despite similar levels of M scarlet, which is a tag that we put in the AAV. Now, so he spent so much time developing this diverse set of promoters that we said, well, let's actually test the idea that if you have the same sequence, same promoter, and just duplicate it many times, maybe you see the recombination issue that has been stopping manufacturing. That's why the previous Duchenne stuff hasn't actually gone to patients yet. And so compared to with the same RNA but different, same sgRNA but different promoter, how does that look? And so you can do full-length nanopore, I think it was nanopore, sequencing to assess the AAV genome packaging efficiency. And you can see that the twin fin, it's another surfing thing, doubles the full genome packaging. That's pretty cool. I mean, this is really exciting. And we said, okay, but how about you put two different guides, right? Because after all, you want to hit several different exons. Nothing else can do that at this point. So, he's going a little bit nuts here, but I don't think we have developed these yet. But basically, if you make a twin fin, which is two different guys with two different promoters, and you can obviously make more and more of them, in SHSY cells where you dox induce the knockdown of TDP-43, you can see that cryptic exon goes up, and then but then you can see reduction in the twin, same as the individual, but now it's all in one, right? And you can do this. I mean, you can see the restoration. Okay, so this is neat, right? Because this is the first time we're showing that you can hit two different targets at the same time in one vector, with the idea that you can hit up to 9, which I don't think we need, but it's a nice thing to have. It's non-immunogenic because it's all RNA. And with the engineering, I think more engineering has to happen. I think you can finally prevent recombination and get this to manufacturing. So Trent led all this work, so all slides should have him on it, but he's been supported by a good team of people, Sarah, Hema, Deepak, Harriet, and then postdocs Dominic and Aaron. And then we couldn't have done this without the assistance of Michael in the Cleveland lab, and showed us exonomy, and then Melissa, Melinda, and John, who helped us a lot with the in vivo mouse studies, and of course, Dawn. And finally, since I suppose this is the editing thing, maybe we show you one paper that we've been doing on editing. So this is Aaron's work, which actually shows that you can take these small nuclear RNAs and you can massage them into shape so that you can do A-to-I editing. You can do actually U to pseudo-U, meaning if you have a stop codon, you want read-through. For termination, you just modify to a pseudo-U, and these are actually pretty efficient. So with that, if I lose my voice, I want to thank you for your time and thank my lab, and I think you guys are floating around here, and the different organizations I've been very grateful to be a part of. Thank you so much.
So you've got the cryptic splice acceptor site, yeah. And it's an adenosine. You can edit that as mm-hmm. opposed to blocking it. Have you looked at that ADAR activity?
I mean, the problem is we have to multiplex the edits right across many different exons eventually. And if you do edits, it has to be a one-time thing. So you have to basically use LNP mRNA because you don't want to keep Cas there for any length of time. And that hasn't really quite worked out for CNS, right? LNP delivery. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed eventually we can get that to work for LNP for CNS. But for now, I think AAV still works pretty well for CNS. And then, this gives us the ability to multiplex without, the problem with also the, some of the other technologies is you still get off-target edits that multiplies, but also it's different in every cell where you get only one thing in. Here, the whole thing is in, so you can control that off target to some extent. Good question, yeah.
Okay.